Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take a stack of sources, notes, research, and basically pull out the most important nuggets and surprising insights for you.
Yep.
Today we're diving into, well, the world of choosing and caring for tiles for your home project. And we're using the Ultimate Tile Guide as our main source.
That's right. Think of this as getting the expert walkthrough of the guide, you know, without needing to read every single word yourself.
Exactly.
Our mission really is to help you cut through all the choices and feel genuinely informed, maybe even confident, when you're actually standing there in the tile showroom or planning that reno.
Yeah, because tiles, let's face it, they're a big deal. Definitely not something you want to get wrong. So we want to give you the key stuff from this guide, make the whole thing less overwhelming and maybe more exciting.
Our goal is just to make the info useful, easy to digest, like a really good cheat sheet.
Okay, let's unpack this. The guide jumps right in with something that, well, it might feel a bit backwards at first. Tile size.
It totally does. It goes against what, you know, a lot of people just assume. The usual thought is small space, use small tiles, right? Like mosaics or those little squares.
That kind of makes sense, though. You wouldn't want some giant tile just dominating a tiny room.
But what this guide points out, and it's a really surprising truth, is that often the opposite works better. Bigger tiles can actually create a much stronger sense of openness.
How does that work?
Well, you end up with fewer grout lines. And fewer lines means the room feels less busy, less cluttered, and, you know, visually just bigger.
That's fascinating. And it really shows how much trends have changed. I mean, wasn't it just a few years ago that 600 by 600 millimeter tiles felt huge?
Totally. And now the trend is pushing way bigger, like 750 millimeter and even, well, much larger than that. You see these massive slabs now.
Wow. Which obviously brings up the next big question for anyone thinking about this. Cost. Are these bigger tiles always going to be pricier?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? Bigger, maybe harder to handle. But the guide actually breaks the cost down in a, well, pretty interesting way. It says the cost per square meter for the larger tiles can be just as affordable.
Really?
Yeah. Or sometimes even cheaper than smaller tiles.
Huh. Okay.
Now, there can be some extra costs you got to factor in because, you know, each tile covers more area. You might need to buy a few more spares to cover cuts or wastage or maybe potential breakage during the install.
Right. Those angled cuts always seem to use more.
Yeah.
And the insulation itself, that might cost a bit more, too.
It could. Yeah. A tiler might charge a little extra because, well, handling those big ones needs more care. They might even need another person to help lift the really massive ones safely.
Okay. That makes sense.
But the good news, the guide points out, is that tilers are, you know, they're adapting. They're getting the right gear, the right suction cups and leveling systems to handle these bigger formats pretty well now.
And the overall takeaway from the guide seems to be that the kind of sophisticated look and that feeling of space you get, it's generally seen as worth any small extra investment. It's about the final impact, not just the material cost.
Absolutely. And that kind of leads us naturally from size and cost into how tiles play with light and, you know, the whole mood of a room, that choice between light and dark tiles.
Right. And this really boils down to two main things, doesn't it? The size of the actual room and critically how much natural light you've got coming in.
Exactly. So if you've got a smaller room or maybe one that doesn't get a ton of sun, lighter tiles are usually the recommendation.
Why is that? Just reflection.
Pretty much. They do a fantastic job bouncing whatever light is there around the room. Makes it feel instantly brighter, more open, like you said, reflection.
Like turning up the brightness dial.
Kind of, yeah. Now, flip side. If you're lucky enough to have a big, spacious room with loads of natural light pouring in, that's where dark tiles can be amazing.
Oh.
Yeah, you can use them to create a totally different feel, maybe something really warm, cozy, or even a bit moody and dramatic.
But here's where the guide throws a curveball, right? The exception for small rooms. It says dark tiles can actually work beautifully, even in a tight space.
Yes. But, and it's a big but.
Mm.
You need to pick ones with a really reflective finish, think polished, or that semi-glossy one called lapado.
And logic goes back to light again.
Exactly. Even though the tile color is dark, that shiny surface bounces light around just like a light-colored tile would. Mm-hmm. It stops the space feeling like, you know, a dark box.
So it's not just color. It's that combo of color and finish.
Yeah.
Very cool. And speaking of dark tiles, the guide has a specific tip if you go down that road.
It does. They strongly suggest choosing what's called a full-bodied or maybe a double-bonded porcelain tile if you're going dark.
Okay, why is that important?
It's really practical if, you know, the worst happens and you get a chip or some damage on a dark tile because the color runs all the way through the tile itself.
Not just a surface print.
Right. That chip or scratch is going to be way less obvious. It helps keep that smooth, seamless look going for longer. Smart thinking, really.
Definitely. Which leads us nicely into the finishes themselves.
Mm.
Matte, Lepado, polished?
Mm-hmm.
How do you choose? The guide seems to tie it back to, well, whether you need to brighten things up or just achieve a certain look.
That's pretty much it. Polished and Lepado, as we said, great for bouncing light around, creating openness. And they're almost essential if you want to try darker tiles in smaller, dimmer rooms.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a definite heads up with polished tiles.
Oh, yeah.
They show everything. Dust, water spots, fingerprints, much more easily than a matte finish does.
The cleaning factor.
Yeah.
So the advice is maybe use them in places without, like, constant muddy boots or kid traffic,
yeah.
Like a master and suite rather than the main family bathroom.
Exactly. Low traffic areas or maybe bathrooms that aren't getting hammered by the whole family every morning.
Which, of course, brings up that common worry. Are polished tiles super slippery?
Well, the guide actually pushes back on that a bit. It says polished tiles aren't automatically more slippery just because they look shiny.
Oh, interesting. So it's not the shine itself.
Not necessarily. What really makes a tile slippery is, well, what's on it? Water, soap, that kind of thing. And crucially, what's on your feet? Apparently, wearing socks on a smooth, dry tile is like asking for trouble.
Huh. I think we've all done the sock slide at some point.
Yeah.
So what's the practical advice then?
Get samples. And test them on the floor in your own home. Stand on them, walk on them with shoes, without shoes. And importantly, ask the shop to wet a sample for you. Feel what the grip is like when it's actually wet.
That makes so much sense. Don't just look at it on the wall.
Exactly. Because every single tile is unique. You got to test it in the conditions it's going to live in.
And talking about grip, the guide mentioned some pretty cool new tech, right?
Oh.
Beyond the traditional anti-slip stuff.
Yeah, so we all know those traditional anti-slip or grip tiles. They've got that really rough textured surface, great for outdoors, you know, patios, pool areas, decks.
Yeah.
Places you can just hose them down or even pressure wash them.
Right, easy clean outside.
But that same texture, that sort of sandpaper feel, makes them a real nightmare to clean indoors. Try wiping one with a sponge or a mop. Just shreds it.
Mm, yeah, I can imagine.
So that's where this breakthrough tech comes in. It's called Gecko In-Out Finish.
Gecko? Like the lizard?
Kind of, yeah. It's genuinely revolutionary stuff. It's engineered so that when the tile is dry indoors, it feels like a normal smooth matte finish. Easy to wipe, easy to mop.
Right.
But here's the clever part. The second it gets wet, the surface transforms and provides proper grip, just like one of those traditional outdoor anti-slip tiles.
Ooh, seriously?
So it changes.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing technology. You get the easy cleaning when it's dry, but the safety when it gets wet. The guide mentions loads of their popular tiles are now coming with this option. That sounds like a game changer, especially for bathrooms or entryways. Okay, so moving from feel and function to how they look in terms of pattern, the guide talks about variation.
Right. You might see it marked with a V rating, usually V1 up to V5. It basically tells you how much the pattern changes from one tile to the next in the box.
And you generally want more variation.
Right.
Like a higher V number.
Often, yeah. Especially if you're trying to make the tile look like natural stone or marble. You know, real stone isn't uniform. It has veins, color shifts.
Mm.
So that variation gives it authenticity. It makes it more visually interesting.
Okay. Makes sense. And related to that is tile faces. What's that about?
Tile faces refers to the number of unique patterns or prints that exist within that specific tile design before the pattern has to repeat itself.
So how many different pictures they have?
Exactly. On, say, cheaper tiles, you might only get a few different faces, maybe 1 to 5. But with modern digital printing, the higher quality tiles can have like 20, 60, sometimes hundreds of unique faces.
And why does that matter so much?
Well, think about it. If you're tiling a big floor and you start seeing the exact same swirl or vein pattern popping up every few tiles.
Yeah, your eye picks it up. It screams fake.
Exactly. Your brain instantly knows, okay, that's not real stone. Because natural materials just don't repeat like that.
And the guide points to certain manufacturers being better at this.
Yeah, it really highlights that the Italian and Spanish manufacturers are, well, leaders in this area. They invest a lot in the design tech to get that high variation and huge number of faces. It makes their tiles incredibly difficult to tell apart from actual marble or stone sometimes.
Which kind of leads us to the origin question that Chinese, Italian, Spanish tiles. Doesn't matter where they come from.
Well, the guide makes an interesting point here. It says when you're talking about just basic durability, the structural quality of the tile itself, there probably isn't a massive difference between countries these days. Quality control is generally pretty good across the board.
Because they're all strong enough.
Pretty much, for their intended use. Where the guide argues the real difference lies is in the design. Ah, back to the aesthetics.
Yeah. Those Italian and Spanish companies, they pour serious money, not just into the printing tech we mentioned, but into R&D for colors, textures, finishes.
So what does that actually mean for the tile you buy?
It often means much richer, deeper, more vibrant colors.
Yeah.
And they really excel at getting those really tricky tones right, like a true consistent black or a really crisp, pure white. Getting those consistent across a huge batch is apparently quite hard.
Interesting. I guess you don't think about the difficulty of making plain white.
Right. So while these European tiles might cost a bit more, the guide makes a strong case that it's usually an investment worth making.
Why is that?
Because, think about it, tiles are one of the absolute hardest things to change in your house once they're down. You're not just going to rip them up next year like you might repaint a wall.
True. It's pretty permanent.
So choosing a high quality, really well-designed tile that you absolutely love, that's a decision you'll likely live with for decades. It's worth getting it right. Okay, good point. Let's switch gears slightly and talk about designing the actual space. Like, should you tile everything? Walls, floors, just bits.
So for wet areas, bathrooms, laundries, the guide's really clear.
Oh.
The strong recommendation is tile all the walls and the floor.
The whole room. Why?
Maximum protection against moisture, basically. Plus, it makes the whole space super easy to clean and ensures it's really durable in what's often a pretty demanding environment. You know, steam, splashes.
Makes total sense for stopping water damage later on. But tiling every single wall, that sounds expensive.
It definitely can be. So if budget is a big factor, the suggestion is to prioritize. You absolutely tile the floor. Then focus on tiling the key wet zones inside the shower, definitely behind the bath, around the vanity sink.
Okay, the splash zones.
Right. And they also suggest tiling the walls that you see immediately when you walk in, the impact wall.
And the less visible ones.
Yeah, maybe the wall behind the door when it's open, or one that's mostly hidden by cupboards.
Mm-hmm.
Those could potentially be left untiled and just painted to save some money.
Okay. Any definite don'ts in terms of partial tiling?
Yes. One clear piece of advice they give is to generally avoid just tiling the bottom half of a wall, like a dado line.
Oh, why is that?
It tends to create a visual break that can make the room feel shorter or just look a bit incomplete, sort of disjointed. It's usually better to tile the whole wall if you can.
What about feature walls? Still a thing.
Still popular, yeah. But the advice now is, if you want a feature, tile the entire wall with a cool tile that complements the others. Don't just do like a thin vertical strip of mosaics or something. That can look a bit dated.
Right. Go big or go home with the feature wall.
Pretty much. Though they do add that sometimes using matching mosaics that are literally cut from your main tile material can be a really subtle, elegant way to highlight something small, like a shower niche or a shelf recess.
Okay. In powder rooms. Less water worry there.
True. Less constant moisture. But even in powder rooms, tiling the walls can add amazing texture and visual punch. It's often a small space, so you can afford to be a bit bolder with the tile choice there. Make a real statement.
Makes sense. Now, there was a crucial rule in the guide about using floor tiles on walls versus wall tiles on floors.
Yes. So important they mention it multiple times. The rule is floor tiles can almost always go on walls. No problem there. But you should never, ever use a tile designated as a wall tile on the floor.
Never, ever. Why not?
It's simple physics and durability. Wall tiles are usually thinner, more delicate. Sometimes they have raised patterns or 3D effects. They are absolutely not designed to take the weight, the impact, the abrasion of people walking on them day in, day out.
Right, they'd crack or wear down super fast. Big safety issue too, I guess.
Huge safety and durability issue. So floor tiles on walls, fine. Wall tiles on floors, big no-no.
Got it. Okay, let's talk about something that seems small but apparently makes a huge difference. Grout.
Oh, massive difference. The guide really hammers this home. The color of your grout will significantly change the final look of your piled area. It's not just the stuff that fills the gaps, it's a design element.
Now you need to choose it carefully.
You absolutely need to discuss it when you're choosing the tiles. It shouldn't be an afterthought.
And they warn about leaving it to the tiler.
Strongly warn against it. Don't just let the tiler decide on the day. They might just use whatever sand or gray or white they happen to have in the van, and it could totally ruin the effect you were going for.
So what's the advice for choosing if you've got those varied stone-look tiles?
For tiles with lots of variation, the usual advice is to pick a grout color that matches the main background color, the base tone, or maybe the most dominant color in the pattern. Helps it blend in.
And for plain white tiles or other neutrals.
Here's a pro tip from the guide. Instead of bright white grout, seriously consider a light gray.
Why gray?
White grout looks amazing for about 5 minutes. Then it gets dirty, it can yellow over time, it shows every speck. Light gray is so much easier to keep looking clean and fresh, much less maintenance hassle.
Good tip. And for wet areas, like inside the shower?
For showers, around baths, anywhere that gets really wet, they recommend asking for epoxy grout.
Epoxy? What's special about that?
It costs a little bit more upfront than the standard cement-based grout, definitely, but the payoff is huge. Epoxy grout is way more water-resistant, almost waterproof, and it's much less likely to get mold or mildew growing in it.
Ah, so less scrubbing horrible, moldy grout lines.
Exactly. Right. Saves you a ton of cleaning effort in the long run. Well worth the small extra cost in those key wet zones.
Okay, thinking about the tiles themselves again. How you lay them out matters too, right? The pattern.
Yeah, the guide encourages you to think beyond just sticking them on the wall. Consider the layout pattern.
What are the options?
Well, you've got classics like the brick stack, you know, offset like bricks, that's quite traditional. Mm. Or the straight stack, where all the grout lines line up perfectly, vertically and horizontally. That gives a much more modern, grid-like look.
Mm-hmm. Any current trends?
A favorite mentioned in the guide right now, especially for rectangular tiles, is the vertical straight stack. So laying longer tiles vertically, but still in that clean, aligned grid, creates a really sleek, contemporary, almost spa-like vibe.
Interesting. How do you decide?
Best way. Get a few of your actual tile samples and just lay them out on the floor in your space. Try the different patterns, see how they look and feel in that room before the tiler starts.
Which brings us to something the guide is really emphatic about. Taking samples home before you buy.
Absolutely non-negotiable. You have got to do this.
Why is it so critical?
Because tile color, the texture, the way it reflects light, it can look completely different under the harsh fluorescent lights of a showroom compared to the natural daylight or evening lamp light in your actual kitchen or bathroom.
Right. The lighting makes a huge difference.
Massive. You need to see how it looks next to your cabinets, your wall pane at different times of day before you commit to buying potentially hundreds of square feet of it.
Makes total sense. It's a big decision to get wrong based on showroom lighting.
Exactly. And or just a practical note from the guide. Be nice. Return the samples quickly so other people can borrow them too.
Good point. Now, there's another important detail about samples. The tiler won't actually use the sample tile you bring back.
Right. Correct. And there's a very important reason for that, which ties into understanding tile batches.
Okay. What's a tile batch?
A batch is basically one specific production run of that tile at the factory. Like all the tiles made on a Tuesday afternoon might be one batch.
And why does that matter to me?
Because even with really good manufacturing, tiny little variations can happen between different batches. Maybe the color is like a fraction of a shade different, or more critically, the size might vary by just a millimeter or two.
A millimeter? Does that really matter?
Oh, it absolutely can. Imagine you're aiming for those really nice, thin 2 millimeter grout lines. If you get tiles from batch A that are spot on, say 600 millimeters, and tiles from batch B that are actually 599 millimeter.
Why, the line won't match up.
Exactly. Your tiler will be tearing their hair out trying to get even grout lines. It looks messy, unprofessional. It really stands out.
So the key is
make absolutely sure that all the tiles ordered for your project come from the same batch number. Your supplier needs to guarantee this. It's crucial for a consistent look, and honestly, it makes your tiler's job way easier and less prone to errors. Mixing batches is a recipe for headaches.
Okay, crucial point. Same batch number for everything. Noted. The guide also briefly mentions getting help with decisions.
Yeah, things like in-store consultations with tile experts or even getting 3D computer renders done so you can really visualize how the tiles will look in your actual room layout before you commit. That can be super helpful.
Good to know those options exist. And then, thankfully, once the hard work of choosing and installing is done, carry for tiles.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy, right?
Generally, yes. That's one of the big advantages of porcelain or ceramic tiles.
Unlike wood floors or natural stone.
Exactly. Those often need special treatments, regular sealing, tiles. Pretty much zero ongoing maintenance beyond just, you know, normal cleaning. No need to reseal them every year or anything like that.
Phew. That's good news. But there's one big rule for cleaning.
One absolutely critical rule the guide emphasizes. Only use cleaning products specifically made for tiles.
Not just any old floor cleaner from the supermarket.
Definitely not. Steer clear of those generic all-purpose cleaners. A lot of them are designed for things like vinyl or maybe even wood, and they contain waxes or shine-enhancing ingredients.
And those are bad for tiles.
Really bad. They don't get absorbed. They just build up on the tile surface over time. This film then attracts dirt and dust like a magnet, makes your tiles look dull and grimy, and ironically, it can actually make them feel slippery, the total opposite of what you want.
Wow. Okay. So using the wrong cleaner can make tiles dirtier and more slippery. Good to know.
Yeah. So the strong advice is talk to your tile shop, the people you bought the tiles from. Ask them to recommend the best cleaning product specifically for the type of tile you chose. Porcelain, ceramic, matte finish, polished. Using the right stuff makes a huge difference in keeping them looking great for years.
Right. So, okay, there we have it. Quite a journey. We've covered the surprising truth about tile size, the light versus dark debate, finishes, that cool gecko grip tech.
Yeah, variation, faces, where tiles come from, layout ideas, the crucial grout choice, samples, batches, and finally, how to look after them, all pulled from the Ultimate Tile Guide.
It really shows, doesn't it? It might seem like just picking a surface, but there's actually a ton of thought, practical stuff, aesthetic stuff that goes into choosing the right tile for you.
And knowing these details, understanding the why behind them, it really can shift the whole process from being, you know, potentially overwhelming to one where you feel much more in control, more empowered to make good choices.
Totally. You know what questions to ask, what things to look out for?
Yeah.
So the big takeaway for you listening, beyond just how the tiles look, how are these choices going to impact the actual feeling of your space, how it functions every day?
Mm-hmm. And that point about tiles being hard to replace. How does making a really considered, informed choice now affect your long-term happiness with the space, your confidence in the design?
Yeah, it's definitely something to think about. Tiles are foundational. They set the stage for the whole room.
It's worth reflecting on that lasting impact for sure. How these choices influence how you actually live and enjoy your home.
So think about your own space, that bathroom reno you're planning, or maybe just a kitchen splashback. How do these insights from the guide apply to your project?
We really hope this deep dive has given you some useful nuggets, some things to chew on.
Thanks so much for joining us for this deep dive.